Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 36, the last chapter of the book. It's only 13 verses long. We will discuss the marriage of female heirs in more particular detail, the marriage of the daughters of Zelophehad, who we have already covered in Numbers 27. Remember, they were the daughters that did not receive an inheritance because they didn't have any brothers. And so their father's name would get wiped out because they didn't have any brothers to inherit the family name. And they appealed to Moses, and Moses said, okay, in that case, Zelophehad's daughters, you can inherit and you can own the property yourself. Our context is this. In chapter 35, verses 1 through 34, we discussed the Levitical cities, the cities the Levites inherited instead of a tribal allotment of land. And six of those cities were the cities of refuge for the manslayer to find refuge in case an avenger of blood is trying to kill him for an accidental or negligent murder. So now we go to Numbers 36, 1 through 4, and we begin. And the heads of the father's households of the family of the sons of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of the sons of Joseph, came near and spoke before Moses and before the leaders, the heads of the father's households of the sons of Israel. And they said, the Lord commanded my Lord, that's the Lord Yahweh commanded my Lord Moses, to give the land by lot to the sons of Israel as an inheritance. And my Lord, talking about Moses, was commanded by the Lord, by Yahweh, to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, to his daughters. That's what I just told you about. That was in Numbers 27. But if they marry one of the sons of the other tribes of the sons of Israel, their inheritance will be withdrawn from the inheritance of our fathers and will be added to the inheritance of the tribe to which they belong. Thus, it will be withdrawn from our allotted inheritance. When the jubilee of the sons of Israel comes, then their inheritance will be added to the inheritance of the tribe to which they belong, so their inheritance will be withdrawn from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. And, of course, the tribe of our fathers is talking about Manasseh. Well, let's look at the family tree here. These are leaders in the family of the sons of Gilead. I'm assuming that it works like this. Joseph had a son, Manasseh. Manasseh had a son, Machir. Machir had a son, Gilead. And then Gilead had a son named Zelophehad. They all were of the tribe of Manasseh. And of course, I think Gilead is the family leader who gave the name to the Transjordan region from the Sea of Galilee down to the tip of the Dead Sea, which was called Gilead, probably named after this gentleman here who is of the tribe of Manasseh. And they're worried because they know the law about Zelophehad's daughters, and the leaders of the tribe of Gilead, they know that the inheritance is passed down to Zelophehad, and Zelophehad didn't have any sons, and so they are worried about some of Zelophehad's property migrating out of the tribe of Manasseh. How would that happen? Well, when Zelophehad's daughters took their inheritance that Moses allowed them to get in chapter 27, they took their inheritance and went off and married somebody in another tribe, let's say tribe of Zebulun. So now Zebulun's got the money instead of Manasseh, and so they're upset about it. So you see, there were two problems with the daughters of Zelophehad, two daughters with a man who doesn't have sons to pass his inheritance to. The first problem is can it go to his daughters? Well, Moses made an exception to the male inheritance rule and said, yes, it can go to the daughters. So that took care of the first problem. Second problem is, once the female daughters have the money inherited and their father is dead, then they go out and marry in another tribe, and then that money's going to pass out of the tribe, because as soon as they marry, the money's going to go to the Zebulunite or the Asherite or the Gadite or whichever other tribe her husband belongs to. So there's your problem. Now, these Gileadites, well, actually, it's probably Zelophehadites, people that were brothers of Zelophehad, who was in the generation below Gilead. They're the ones that came, probably. It's because it says in verse 1, the heads of the father's household of the family of the sons of Gilead. So I'm assuming that's Zelophehad and his brothers. Of course, Zelophehad is dead. He died with no male heirs. And so it's Zelophehad's brothers, and they're the ones complaining. And they're going before Moses and before the leaders. And this phrase shows up a lot. The heads of the father's households of the sons of Israel. I'm just going to assume one leader per tribe. I don't know. Maybe it's more than one. I never have been able to figure that out exactly. But it's just easier to think of 12 tribal leaders arrayed there before the tabernacle with Moses. So they say, Moses, what are we going to do here? Now, in verse 4, they make a specific complaint that we need to look at. Well, before we do that, let's go back to the problem again. When they married these daughters who've inherited instead of their brothers, because there were no brothers, they pass their inheritance to males in another tribe when they get married. Well, when does that inheritance pass? When they die or when they get married? Well, Kyle and Delitzsch say that the passing of the property goes when these women with money, women, these heiresses we'll call them, when they marry, the money automatically goes to their husband. And that, if it's the husband in another tribe, the money would pass out, the land would pass out of the tribe of Manasseh. So we're going to assume that Kyle and Delitzsch are right. That's when the property passes. Now, there's a question here. Why bring up this secondary problem of heiresses marrying outside of their own tribe? Why not at Numbers 27 when Moses first dealt with the problem of a man who dies with no sons to inherit but only daughters? Why not bring it up there? That's a logical place. Adam Clark says it's because the text was arbitrarily separated by editors. Well, that's possible. I don't know. I never worry too much about that kind of thing. Now, verse 4 has something interesting we need to look at. The leaders of the family of the sons of Gilead, Zelophehad's brothers, they say this to Moses and the leaders of the tribes. When the Jubilee of the sons of Israel comes, then there, that's the heiresses of the Zelophehad daughters, then their inheritance will be added to the inheritance of the tribe to which they belong. In other words, to the tribe they married into. So their inheritance will be withdrawn from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers, from Manasseh. We're going to lose some property here. That's not right. Now, the issue here, the problem is, why do the sons of Gilead, why do the Manassites, why do they say when the Jubilee of the sons of Israel comes, then the land's going to pass out of Manasseh? Why the Jubilee? The land's already passed out right upon marriage. So why mention the year of Jubilee? Well, that's an interesting question. Colin Delitzsch has the answer to it. It's true that upon marriage, the inheritance would pass to the other tribe. Let's just, for the sake of example, say the heiress, the daughter of Zelophehad, married a member of the tribe of Asher. Okay? So the inheritance would pass to the Asherite, the male Asherite, at the marriage. That's in general. But there's some cases where the property could come back into the tribe of Manasseh. How was that possible? Well, if the marriage was childless, if the woman marries an Asherite and they don't have any kids, well, now, where's the money going to go? It's going to go back to the Manassehites. It's going to go back through Zelophehad because it was her money when she got married. It's not going to go to the Asherite. So that's a possibility that the money could come back. Or the Asherite, or the Zelophehad's daughter, heiress, they could actually sell the property back to another person from Manasseh, and the money and the tribe, the land, would go back to the tribe of Manasseh. So when the woman married, when the heiress married outside of the tribe of Manasseh, the property probably would go out of the tribe, but not necessarily. There are two examples when it could come back. She didn't have any children, or she sold, or her husband sold the property back to a Manassehite so it could come back. However, when you get to the year of Jubilee, this is going to make the transfer of the property out of the tribe of Manasseh final and complete. The reason for that is that property always went back to the original tribal owners at the year of Jubilee, even property that had been alienated out of the tribe. And so if the Zelophehad daughter had alienated her property, which was now belonging to the Asherite, if she had alienated it back to somebody in the tribe of Manasseh at the year of Jubilee, that property would come back from the tribe of Manasseh back into the tribe of Asher. And thus, at the year of Jubilee, the final alienation of the property out of Manasseh into Asher would be complete, and there'd be no way the tribe of Manasseh would ever get the money back. So that's why they mentioned the year of Jubilee here in verse 4. Now, there's another way you can explain verse 4, the mention of the year of Jubilee here. When the Jubilee of the sons of Israel comes, is you could translate it as even when the Jubilee of the sons of Israel comes. And the idea there would be even Jubilee is not going to get the daughters' lands back to Manasseh. Usually the land comes back to the original tribal owners, and so the Zelophehad heiress, you would think the land would come back to the original tribal owner Manasseh, but even the Jubilee is not going to get it back because she's married into another tribe. Well, that's a simple solution. I don't know what commentator I read that gave me that. But I like Kyle and Delitzsch's explanation better. It's that They're just talking about the final transfer, because there's always a possibility the land could come back into Manasseh upon the marriage of a female heiress in the tribe of Manasseh to another tribe member, a husband of another tribe. It could come back, but in verse 4, when the Jubilee comes, that's it. It's over. Either way, that explains verse 4. So now we go to Numbers 36, verses 5 through 9. Then Moses commanded the sons of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, the tribe of the sons of Joseph are right in their statement. Sons of Joseph talking about Manasseh, because Manasseh was Joseph's son. So Moses agreed. He said, verse 6, this is what the Lord has commanded concerning the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, let them marry whom they wish, only they must marry within the family of the tribe of their father. Simple solution. If you're worried about alienating the property out of Manasseh, just make them marry Manassehites, and so the property stays in the tribe of Manasseh. Now, notice there's not too much concern about romance here. What happens if one of the daughters of Zelophehad falls in love with an Asherite? Too bad. That's just the way it was. Verse 7, thus no inheritance of the sons of Israel shall be transferred from tribe to tribe, for the sons of Israel shall each hold to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. This was a big deal, as we've seen in the book of Numbers. The tribes had to stay together until the time of the Messiah, so that all the prophecies about the tribe of Judah and all that would be true. Verse 8, every daughter who comes into possession of an inheritance of any tribe of the sons of Israel shall be wife to one of the family of the tribe of her father, so that the sons of Israel shall each may possess the inheritance of his fathers. So a female heiress who inherited because she had no brothers to inherit, that's fine, she's got property, but she's got to marry within her tribe. Thus no inheritance shall be transferred from one tribe to another tribe, for the tribes of the sons of Israel shall each hold to his own inheritance. Now, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown make the point that this law of Jewish heiresses only applied to heiresses with no male next of kin. In other words, if she didn't have anybody to pass that property to in her native tribe, in our case, the tribe of Manasseh, if she didn't have anybody to pass her property to, she had to marry within her tribe. But what happens if she did? What happens if she has a son, for example, and then her husband dies, and so then she marries outside the tribe? Well, the property would go to her son, so she could marry. Now, she'd have to give up the property. She couldn't inherit the property, but there would still be an heir within her original tribe, in this case, the tribe of Manasseh, and so there's no problem. She could marry outside her tribe. However, she would give up her inheritance. So this law, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown and Adam Clark point out to, it only applies to heiresses with no male next of kin. If she had a male next of kin that she could leave the property to, then she's free to remarry outside the tribe. But if it's only her with the property, she marries within the tribe so that she can pass that property on to a fellow Manassite. Here's an example of this, 1 Chronicles 23:22. Eleazar died. Remember, he's the high priest. He died and had no sons, but daughters only. So Eleazar the high priest was in the same position as Zelophehad. So their brothers, the sons of Kish, took them as wives. So the sons of Kish, who, if I remember correctly, that was the family of Saul, Benjamites, the daughters married outside of their tribe. They married Benjamites. But apparently those daughters had male heirs that could take the property. Now in verse 8, we see that every daughter who comes into possession of an inheritance, that's what the law said there. Every daughter, this is not just for the daughters of Zelophehad. This illustrates the case law of Jewish law. Cases are given, but you're supposed to make inferences from those cases to come up with general rules. In this case, the general rule is given right there in the text. Every daughter is going to be in the same, every landed heiress of all tribes, not just the tribe of Manasseh, but all tribes are going to, the law is going to apply to them too. Verse 9 ends up by saying, the tribes of the sons of Israel shall each hold to his own inheritance. Of course, as I said, that was important because, as John Gill says, we need to have it clearly appear what tribe and family the Messiah is going to spring from. So the prophecies which would be fulfilled about Messiah springing from Judah, for example, Lion of Judah on the throne, well, if there's no tribe of Judah for Jesus to spring from, then the prophecies wouldn't be true. And we know that God, who controls the prophets, who illumines the prophets, who inspires the prophets, he also controls the future. And the way he controlled the future was by requiring this law, these marriage laws that kept the tribal boundaries or the tribal inheritance intact. Now, notice we've talked about women marrying outside of their own tribe. They could not do it unless they gave up their inheritance to a male heir in their local tribe. But now, it was okay for men to marry into other tribes. They could take wives from another tribe because the inheritance went through the male side, so no transfer of property would come from outside the tribe into the tribe. No property would be transferred from one tribe to another, which, of course, is the overall aim of the law here. Now, Adam Clark points out that Levites were exempt from this special law of landed heiresses. The Levites did not have tribal property, and so they didn't have to worry about a Levite woman marrying outside of her tribe and passing property to another. A Benjamite or an Asherite or a Gedite is not going to happen because the Levites don't have such property to be transferred out. Now, they did have cities, but that didn't count, apparently, because it doesn't matter about those cities. It's the tribes that matter. Now, this exemption from the law of special heiresses that Clark mentions, I'm not sure whether he got that from the scriptures or from Jewish traditional law, if it's just a matter of logic, but I'll take his word for it. We go down to Numbers 36, verses 10 through 13. Just as the Lord had commanded Moses, so the daughters of Zelophehad did. Mahlah, Tirzah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Noah. I'll call these the Ah girls. They all ended with the name Ah. And the middle one is Hoglah. What a name. Hoglah. The daughters of Zelophehad married their uncle's sons. So that's their uncle's sons would be their first cousins. They married Manassites. The Manassites got their property, and so the property stayed within the tribe of Manasseh. Now everybody's happy now. They didn't leave the tribe of Manasseh when they got married. Verse 12, they married those from the families of the sons of Manasseh, the sons of Joseph, and their inheritance remained with the tribe of the family of their father. Verse 13, these are the commandments and the ordinances which the Lord commanded to the sons of Israel through Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan opposite Jericho. Notice how the book of Numbers ends on a happy note, as the NIV Study Bible points out. Verse 10, just as the Lord had commanded Moses, just like he commanded, they so did. Well, that's nice. The Israelites were often disobedient, but not here. These Zelophehad women were noble women. They were not chiefly concerned about their personal desires. They were rather concerned about their father's name and their place in the land, in the tribe of Manasseh. They were worried about that, not about a romance. So their concern was more practical, more theological, if you will. They're concerned about their father's name and their place in the land. That's according to the NIV Study Bible. Now, verse 13 says, these are the commandments and the ordinances which the Lord commanded. These commandments could be concerning the division of the land of Canaan, not just the laws concerning heiress daughters with no brothers, as John Gill says. In other words, these commandments not referring to just to chapter 36, but also to chapter 35, where the land was divided. I think that's probably true. Now, one last minor point. Are commandments any different than ordinances? Adam Clark's got a long list of differences of these names for statutes and ordinances and commands. And I've read through that. This is on Leviticus 26:15. Clark was commentating on that. And I said, I don't see what difference it makes. I can't tell the difference is worth getting excited about. But I tell you what I am excited about. We are finished with the book of Numbers. And so in our next audio, we are going to take up the book of Deuteronomy starting in chapter 1. I hope you join me with me in that enterprise, and I hope you enjoyed this chapter 36 of Numbers.